Smith.
I was never thinking about being in the Pride or making a Hall of Fame or anything. I just wanted to come to work, play football, and it's a privilege for us to play in the NFL. And it was a blessing for me, and I wanted to respect the game, and I played it with everything that I had. Well, that journey has been tough, and it's not over yet. A friend was talking to me, and he mentioned that you are an all-pro at getting back up. And that's the message that I want to spread throughout to every kid, every Jacksonville fan, every adult, everyone. Be an all-pro at getting back up, because you're going to get knocked out.
Good afternoon. You have to excuse me. I'm emotional today. It's been a long time coming. I'm incredibly honored and humbled to be inducted into the Pride of the Jaguars today. I found it difficult to express how I really feel today. And for me, there's no other goal more important than getting inducted into the Pride of the Jaguars today. Even if one day I get voted to the NFL Hall of Fame, that can never mean more than what it means to me today and get inducted into the Pride. Thank you very much, Jag Nation. I love you.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, glad you're along with us on this Tuesday morning. Hey, Tyler, are you close by? Is there a microphone handy that you can speak into right now?
I'm here. Yeah, what's up?
Do me a favor. Pick that microphone up, drop it, and just walk out right
now.
That was excellent, man. Tyler Devitt for MVP of the Jaguars for 2016. What do you say? I mean, honestly, give him a little more material to work with, and you'd have something like that every single week, man.
That's the best two-win team I've ever seen.
Woo, baby. That was good stuff there. Jimmy
still
Smith.
Still could be. Might be the best 2-14 team ever.
It might be. You never know, Tony. You never know with the talent that they have just waiting to break free. But good stuff there. Tyler blending Jimmy as he appeared with us last Friday. And then, of course, his emotional acceptance of his induction into the Pride of the Jaguars.
I do have to say a big thank you to Jaguars.com. They have the entire ceremony online. If you missed it, if you were in the press box like me and you missed it, the entire ceremony is online. Obviously, if you're at home, you didn't see it, but it's great stuff. The entire thing on Jaguars.com.
Yeah, they do a terrific job. Honestly, their audiovisual department does a tremendous job. They're the AV club.
They do.
The Jaguars. Were you in the AV club ever back when you're in school? I was. You know why? Because it got you out of class sometimes. You had to go get the film projector and or the overhead projector. Like, hey, I need one. I don't have one in class. And I got to occasionally set up a film strip or two.
Nice.
Back in the day. I was just prepping for a career in the broadcast business, Tony.
Right? I guess so.
Is what I was doing.
I mean, I've fed film through a projector. I've actually done that.
In a movie theater.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I've done that, which you don't even do anymore. It's all digital, basically, now.
Shall we talk about jobs that we used to have or once desired for the next 2 hours?
I think.
It certainly could be, right? I mean, no doubt about that. All right. So, Jimmy Smith in the Pride. I'm not going to dwell on that today, but we will look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. And with an eye towards the final 3 weeks, but also towards the 2017 season, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day today asks you this: are there any assistant coaches on this Jaguars coaching staff that you would like to see retained next year? And if so, why? Maybe you'd like to see several of them. It's not, even under circumstances where you get a new head coach in, it's not unprecedented to have coaches retained on the next staff. In fact, Jerry Sullivan was one of those guys who was here under Mike Mularkey, and he got retained. He has an excellent reputation. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. In certain areas, and not everything is critically broken for the Jaguars. We've already had people suggesting that it wouldn't be the worst thing to have some continuity with Todd Wash running this defense. Don't know if that'll happen. Who knows, who's making these decisions, but we are asking you for your opinion as a Jaguar tried and true, faithful fans out there, who you would like to see, if anyone, retained and why. So share with us your thoughts on that on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, and of course on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, 641-1010 if you want to get in, talk any aspect of Jags football. Pretty much everything's on the table for you right there, and also we'll check in periodically on the text line at the same number. Gus Bradley met with the media yesterday. I know some of you have reached a point where you're tuning out everything Gus says, but for those of you who haven't, we'll listen in to what he had to say about getting ready for the final 3 weeks, three division games. So, you know, we talked about this yesterday. You know, how do you want to approach these? I think they're both valid arguments. Some fans just want to win anytime you line up, and that's what fandom is all about to them. Others say, hey, you know what? I do feel that way up until the point we're eliminated, and now that we are, let's try to position ourselves to acquire the best talent possible in the offseason. Obviously, the higher draft pick you have, the more you have to choose from. So either way you go on that, you can weigh in on that as well throughout the course of the day. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today. We're live at EverBank. Check the tape Tuesday on pause, as some have suggested we should call it Burn the Tape Tuesday. We wouldn't be opposed to that either. If you want to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Live at EverBank, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Alan Hearns, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Do you take any extra motivation or satisfaction of ruining the season of Houston, Tennessee, or Indianapolis, or is that overblown, you know, in the fan world?
I don't think we get any satisfaction from that. You know, the main thing for us, you know, we trying to get a win. We got two wins right now. So that's our thing right now. So these last 3 weeks, hopefully we can stack them up. You know, our 2-11 doesn't look good at all, you know, and we haven't won a home game yet. It's just crazy, man. This season was a disaster for sure.
That is Alan Hearns appearing this morning on the drill. Jeff Prosser asking him about the possibility of playing spoiler. He seemed to indicate that doesn't even cross your mind. I think it depends on, you know, the team you're on, the circumstance. From time to time, I think you see teams get specifically up and take great delight in knocking a divisional opponent out of their chance to go to the postseason, particularly if there's some animosity between the organizations, what have you. But
sure.
Like Alan Hearns said, man, we just need our own. We need the win for us to get this bad taste out of our mouth. Not that one win fixes an 8-game losing streak, but it beats the alternative from the players' perspective. So we'll see if they're able to get that done coming up this weekend. Tony, get some early returns here on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. We asked you today, are there any assistant coaches that you'd like to see retained off of this current staff? This one coming in from the 904 area code. I thought retaining members from the defensive staff would make sense, but it's really understated how much his team does not force turnovers, and I think that has to be scheme-related. We don't even get our hands on the ball. With that being said, no one from the defense should be retained. No one from the defensive coaching staff, I read that. There aren't too many offensive coaches I think you'd entertain keeping, Jerry Sullivan being one, if he wants to continue coaching. You know, there's been some talk that he's getting towards the end of his career by choice. Certainly he's a coveted commodity. Here's another one. No, we need a clean sweep. All four phases can be way better. Offense, defense, special teams, and coaching. There's four phases on Sunday, not three, just so y'all know. Okay, that's fine. We're talking about specifically one of those phases. You're not going to have a clean sweep of the other three phases. Maybe you would on special teams on occasion, but even then, some of the guys who are playing next year are some of the guys who are playing this year, contributing to a 2-11 start so far this season. You hope better times ahead for those guys. Jerry Sullivan, most definitely, as opposed to partially definitely, or least definitely, but he's
somewhat definitely.
Somewhat definitely. Let's see. That's about it on the early returns on that, but you can weigh in there. There's another one, Sullivan and Dwayne Walker. Just coming in. So you can weigh in on that at 641-1010 on the text line driven by Duval Ford. 641-1010 also operates conveniently enough as the phone line. And let's get to some Gus Bradley coming out of the weekend and talking about where things stand for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And starting off with, speaking of phases, all three outside of the coaching, Apparently. Offense, defense, special teams, all three phases contributed to this latest loss.
Today is all about trying to find the truth. What it really came down to was the fourth quarter. We had a chance. We were in the lead, start of the fourth quarter, and then each unit took turns not fulfilling our responsibility, whether it was offense where we had 2-3 and outs defensively, gave up a couple touchdown drives, and special teams, you know, roughing a punter and a block punt and a block field goal. So each unit took responsibility for that. You know, when you have a lead like that going the fourth quarter against a good team like Minnesota, you got to take advantage of those opportunities, and each unit has to come through, and we didn't do that yesterday.
Yeah, here's – look, each unit took responsibility for that. What else are they going to do? It's on that. Who, you know, I mean, if you didn't take responsibility for it, it wouldn't change the fact that you're the group that's at fault. This, hey, you know what, let's get together. I get it. You've got to get together and assess your team, but, hey, let's get together on Monday and tell the truth about why we didn't get a win for the eighth consecutive week. Doesn't seem to be producing the opposite result, the turnaround that, like, hey, here are the mistakes we made. Here's why we made them. What can we do to change it? Obviously, they're working on it. I don't question that they're working on it. You know, they're trying to figure it out. These guys are competitors. They want to win. But the bottom line is, you tell the truth all you like, the results haven't changed. That's the bottom line truth of this organization.
I guess it's nice that they're not passing the buck yet. The same as it's nice that they still play hard. Hooray.
Right. I mean, what, you know, if your return coverage team gives up a big return, who else are they going to blame it on but the return coverage team?
I guess it's nice that the defense isn't pointing fingers at the offense yet, and everybody isn't pointing fingers at the special teams.
There are enough fingers to go around this week, I think, at various points in the game.
Well, and I think there are most weeks, honestly. And I get that the defense has played better than the offense this year for the vast majority of the season. But, look, they still aren't forcing turnovers. They still aren't hitting the opposing quarterback enough. And, look, they have to know going into a game that, in with the way their offense is playing, and they know how the offense is playing going into the game, we probably need to score. Like, that has to cross somebody's mind at some point. If we're going to win this football game, we need to take the ball away from the opponent. They haven't done it.
Right.
You know, and I think for the Jaguars, that's what winning football would look like in 2016. And I think they've known that for a couple months and just haven't been able to do it.
It'd be very much like the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, who thrived. Now, they didn't do it this week. They didn't need to, but they have thrived on turnovers and scoring on defense and special teams.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you look at how important special teams is. You watch Monday Night Football last night. The Patriots get out to a big lead, and then they're muffing punts, they're fumbling kickoffs, and all of a sudden the Baltimore Ravens are back within 3 points until Brady breaks their back with that bomb to Chris Hogan. So, you know, special teams often overlooked. Is John Harbaugh the only former special teams coordinator who's currently a head coach in the National Football League?
I guess John Fossil now.
That's
LA.
Right, as the interim, yeah. Right? But it's not very common whatsoever. It's an overlooked area. They do need to improve across the board in, you know, coverage. Meyer's got to be better. Nortman started off the year fantastic. He's faded somewhat down the stretch here. The return game has been atrocious with how many muff balls, fumbles they've had on punt returns. Marquise Lee, serviceable on kickoff returns, but do you want your best offensive weapon running one of the most dangerous plays? I get it. It's an important play, but ideally, no. You don't have too many starting wide receivers that are returning kickoffs in the National Football League, which I think are much more dangerous than punt returns because of the run-up that guys have a chance to build up speed and come level you on.
Yeah, you'll see Antonio Brown. Odell Beckham was returning punts on Sunday night in a big game for the Giants, so they wanted to have a dynamic guy back there returning punts. But kickoffs, no, that's not generally what you have those guys doing. Another cut here from Gus Bradley, speaking after the game on Sunday yesterday at his press conference, and it's a question that we have gotten all season long. It seems like it quieted down for a couple weeks there with Dan Scooter not really being available out of the football team, but Miles Jack basically got half the snaps that Dan Scooter did during the game on Sunday. Gus Bradley was asked about the reason for less playing time for Jack.
That's not that he's not doing anything. It's some of it based on the personnel groupings that we saw. Yesterday we chose, if they went to a heavier personnel grouping, get a chance to get Dan on the field a little bit more.
I mean, it's a chance to get. I don't know if they're looking for chances to get Scooter on the field or not. I mean, for me, I'm looking for reasons to keep Miles Jack on the field, even in circumstances. Look, I get it. They're trying to win. They're trying to do what they think is
best.
Until
he tapped his helmet, he wouldn't come off the field if they had three linebackers
right?
out there.
I mean, that's kind of, you know, the situation. I understand you're trying to win in the moment. And on any – I'm not saying every single snap you can't have Scoot out there, but Miles Jack, to me, should be playing the vast majority of them between the two, and that's not the way it worked out this weekend. Here's one that seemed inexcusable to us. Delay of game on a kickoff.
They were stunned. They had scored the first touchdown of the game, and they forgot they had to keep playing football.
It ensues that something else follows this.
Yeah, I think both teams were convinced that the first one to score a touchdown automatically won
game
that
over.
Football game. Yeah.
It didn't work out that way, but officially the penalty goes to the kicker in that circumstance because he's the one who didn't kick the ball. That'd be Jason Myers, and Gus was asked about that delay of game situation.
Now, that one you can put on us as coaches. What took place was we had a deep kick on that, and we changed it to go to more of a squib based on what we saw. So with that, we changed personnel as far as how they were aligned on the kickoff team, and we switched it, and the call got in, but they didn't recognize it, the players, and so there's communication taking place.
What was the weather like? It was beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Like, can't Myers just drill it through the end zone? Almost.
He did.
Right, I know, but can't
– Like, after the delay, he kicked it out of the end zone.
Was that right?
Yeah.
On the delay?
Yeah.
I thought he squibbed it following the delay.
No,
he did.
He did on the official play, but he kicked it anyway. And he kicked it through the end zone on the delay
of
game.
Oh, on the delay of game.
Then they moved it back 5 yards and they squibbed.
And then they squibbed, which I thought they might have done because they thought he couldn't kick it out of the end zone necessarily from five yards deeper. And Gus is saying they had to squib on the whole way, and I guess communication got crossed. But again, if you could tell me the opponent could start at the 25-yard line every time in today's NFL, I'd take that every single time.
Absolutely.
Right? Don't give up the big play. Now, occasionally
– especially if you're kicking it to a guy like Patterson.
Right.
And I think that's – again, this is – they do this in Jag. They get in their own head a little bit sometimes. And they had seen Cordarrelle Patterson on a kick that was 4 or 5 yards deep decide to come out because he's Cordarrelle Patterson. And I think they were trying to get cute with what they were going to do on the next one and say, well, let's squib it so that even if he only kicks it 6 yards deep, we're not going to give him the return. Well, you're allowed to cover the kick, one. And you have a guy that part of the reason you kept him over the other guy was because he gives you an advantage on kickoffs.
The monster leg.
So use it.
Right.
Don't try to get cute in that kind of situation. They did. In the end, it cost them the delay of game because it didn't get communicated properly. And then they gave up the field position anyway on the squib kick.
Look, I understand when you say you're allowed to cover the kick. In other words, hey, just because he's going to bring it out of the end zone doesn't mean you have to quake in fear. But I will also admit that they have to recognize right now they're just not very good at it right
now.
No,
I get that.
Right? So it's not like, you know, no matter how much they want to execute that play, whether it's not having the right personnel or the right scheme or the right attitude or whatever, it's just not working right now. They're bad in that, they're deficient in that area. So they're trying to come up with something, but I'm with you. You got this guy who's that power in the leg is a big part of his game, his weapon. Use it. Kick it out of the back of the end zone. Let's get one more in before we break here.
Yeah, one more here on the special teams. Gus Bradley was asked if the errors on special teams are on the coaches or if they're on the players.
Shared responsibility. There's some things, you know, you put in a game plan and then you ask the players, they got to execute, and that's their job. And it's also our job as coaches to put players in position to make plays. And I think you saw both of that take place yesterday.
Yeah, and, you know, without getting into too many specifics, I do think at times it's just simply, you know, big return because the guy missed his assignment. I mean, if you have the guy, you're trying to fill lanes, you're trying to, you know, keep the field balanced because that's what happens sometimes. If you kick it to the right side and the coverage is anticipating going to the left, you get open lanes like that. If you've got guys in the right position and they simply miss tackles or they don't get off blocks well enough, I don't know what much more you can do as a coaching staff other than find new players. And maybe, you know, with special teams, you do that and churn the bottom of the roster a little bit more. By the way, Tyler says, according to ESPN Stats and Info, a delay of game penalty on a kickoff occurred all of 2 times last year in the entire National Football League. It happened to the Dolphins in Week 15 against San Diego, and the Saints were penalized in Week 7 against Indianapolis. So only twice throughout the entirety of 32 teams playing a full schedule in 2015, and I don't know how many times it's happened in 2016, but it happened once right here in Jackson. I mean, it's a super infrequent occurrence. Couldn't have happened more than a handful of times this year, and it just goes to show you they're finding new and creative ways to shoot themselves in the foot and make it more of an uphill climb every single week. More Gus Bradley coming up if you'd like to get on board, 641-1010. And, of course, the question of the day is this. Are there any assistant coaches on this coaching staff that you'd like to see retained into 2017? If so, why? And share your thoughts with us on Twitter and or on Facebook, or you can call us at 641-1010. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The final three games for the Jaguars will be against AFC South opponents, the Texans, the Titans, and the Colts. And this morning on The Drill, Alan Hearns was asked about being a spoiler for those teams and if it gives them any satisfaction.
I don't think we get any satisfaction from that. You know, the main thing for us, you know, we trying to get a win. We only got two wins right now. So that's our thing right now. So these last 3 weeks, hopefully we can stack them up. You know, our 2-11 doesn't look good at all, you know, and we haven't won a home game yet. It's just crazy, man. This season was a disaster for sure.
This has been Jags Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
He's very highly competitive. I think where he's at as far as a mindset and how he goes out there, he's playing with a lot of confidence. And when you play with that much confidence, that's what you're seeing out there on the field by him. He's just in a really good place right now.
And me and A-Rod were just talking about it the other day. You know, yeah, the season hasn't been going good for us. You know, but we're proud that Marquise Lee got a good year under his belt. You know, he really needed that as far as how his first 2 years went. You know, we just proud of him, man.
That is both Gus Bradley and Alan Hearns. Gus Bradley at his Monday press conference. Alan Hearns this morning live on The Drill with Dan and Jeff talking about the emergence of Marquise Lee this year. Tony, just to try to put a little positivity. We're realists. We understand where the season's trash at this point, but Marquise Lee is a bright spot, certainly. I don't think Allen Robinson, maybe he's not ever going to be as good as 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns, but that was a likelihood no matter what. Not many guys have multiple years that good ever in their career. I think, though, he's closer to that than he's showing this year. I don't think what we're seeing this year is the true indication of what Allen Robinson is going to be going forward. So if it's somewhere in the middle of those two, and if Allen Hearns just kind of gets over his case of the drops that he had this year, I think Allen Hearns is the guy he's always been. Tough guy, surprisingly good after the catch. He sneaks up on you because he's not a 4-3 guy, but he certainly doesn't get caught too often. No. And then if you have Lee having this season to build on, if you can get some consistent quarterback play, I really do still like the trio of wide receivers that they have. I know it's been a difficult year for Allen Robinson, but if you look at it, could Marquise Lee be a number one wide receiver? Well, he's not in the mold of an A.J. Green or, you know, one of these big statuesque guys like we thought Allen Robinson was going to be featured as, but as long as they're giving you top two wide receiver, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two production out of your top guys with Allen Hearns as maybe your third guy. However, if they're all contributing enough, I think they have enough at the position to be competitive week in, week out.
Should be. And as far as 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns in the history of the NFL, there's only been 19 of those seasons.
19 seasons, period.
Of 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns. You have to hit both of those criteria. There's only three guys in NFL history that have done it more than once. Two of them are pretty easy.
I got to say Rice, right? Just because
Rice did it three times.
He does it. Randy Moss
did it three times.
Don Hutson.
No.
Lance Allworth.
Lance did it once in 1965.
T.O.
did it once in 2001.
Who you got? Who's the other one who did it twice?
Marvin Harrison.
Okay, wow. I'm surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be. He's the most prolific pass catcher to play with Peyton Manning throughout his career.
Yeah, 2001. He did it back-to-back years. And then the next season in 2002, probably had the best year of his career. Caught 143 passes for 1,722 yards, but only 11 touchdowns.
Only 11, right?
So he didn't hit the touchdown number.
I mean, you know, he scored plenty, obviously. You could see him catching those back corner fades from Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
But he was a tiny guy, wasn't a big, you know, you wouldn't think it would be a highly regarded red zone target.
No,
but
14 touchdowns is a ton.
Absolutely. All right, let's get Chris and Mandarin here at 641-1010, breaking the seal this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Chris. What can we do for you?
Hey, I know this is a little unprecedented, but I actually wouldn't mind seeing Gus Bradley stay as our just defensive coordinator. I think he would be more along the lines of a Dick LeBeau, Cam Cameron, Norv Turner type that's a better coordinator, Charlie Strong, that I think is a better coordinator than to their respected positions than an actual head coach. And I'll just
that may be the case. You know, he may, and I think that, I mean, it's hard to believe Gus wouldn't be a better coordinator right now than the fact that, you know, he's got a 14-47 record as a head coach.
He was a better coordinator than he has been a head coach.
Right, but it's not going to be here.
I mean,
it's just, and that's, you know, to the point of the question or the suggestion right there, where this came up yesterday. You don't take a guy who was previously the head guy, take his power away, and keep him on the staff. It just doesn't happen. I can't think of a single instance where it's ever happened in the National Football League. And I think you just set up a situation where you have divided loyalties. Maybe there'll be some guys who say, hey, Gus got a raw deal. I'm not saying he did get a raw deal in reality. I'm just saying, you know, players may feel that way. They may have an affinity for him. Are you going to create factions in the locker room? Is a new guy coming in? Are they going to, you know what I mean? It's just a bad situation. Different deal. Anything below that coordinator level or below, you can do that. It's not super common, but you can do that. But, you know, in the case of Gus or any head coach for that matter, sticking around and taking a lesser position on the staff with the same team immediately afterwards, just not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. And we were talking about this a little bit yesterday off air, but I don't know. I guess it's not 100% that Gus Bradley's out in Jacksonville. It's just kind of the way everything seems to be pointing. So if Gus isn't going to be the head coach in Jacksonville going forward, then where does he go from there? I certainly think he can still work in the league, but I'm not even sure he comes back in the league as a coordinator after the kind of run that he's had as a head coach here in Jacksonville. He may have to go the position coach route and kind of work his way back up again. I'm not saying that I don't think he can, because I do. He was a dynamic coordinator for Seattle for a couple of years, so I certainly think he's capable of doing that, but it's not going to happen in Jacksonville. It's just not. You don't keep a guy who could potentially lose 50 games in 4 years and demote him to keep him on that staff. That doesn't make much sense.
Tyler found this. He said the closest thing he could find was Gunther Cunningham was elevated from defensive coordinator to head coach in Kansas City after Marty Schottenheimer resigned. He was then fired after two seasons and replaced by Dick Vermeil. And 4 years later, he brought him back to be defensive coordinator of that football team. So he kind of, you know, he got elevated. But there was a 4 year period in between before he came back. So and Vermeil had established himself, and it's not going to happen, right? It's just simply not going to happen. I mean, Todd Wash is a possibility again if you get the right offensive-minded guy who says, I like where they're headed in that direction. I agree with the earlier texter who said, hey, where are the turnovers, man? You know, where are them even getting their hands on the football? Is this scheme related? Do we have the right scheme here? This stuff with the auto and the, you know, the big end at the left defensive end, look, it's great if you've got the right personnel. Anything, I suppose, is great if you had the right personnel, Tony. Just run a basic 4-3, you know, or a 3-4 for that matter. And, you know, give me – I don't need the 280-pound end whose, you know, main job is to hold the point against the run. I'll take two pass rushers out there, please, if you don't mind.
Yes. To give you an idea, passes defensed. Right, we've talked about this number a little bit the last couple of weeks. First of all, they got 3 interceptions this year, which is just awful.
Right, and you get a pass defense on every interception as well. Anytime you get your hands on the ball and either break it up or take it away.
16th, all right, to be 16th in the National Football League, right in the middle of the pack, you got to defend 60 passes this year.
60.
Atlanta, okay. Chicago, Philadelphia are tied for 14th with 60. Seattle is 17th with 59. The Jaguars have defensed 25 passes. Less than half of that.
Right, it's about 2 a week.
Yeah, 31st in the league. The next lowest team is the Jets with 41. They have 16 less than the next closest team. I mean, that's crazy how low that number is this year for them.
Right, but, you know, and you think about it. Is Cleveland any better than Jacksonville. They haven't won a single game, right? So it's not like teams are feeling the need to have to throw the ball on them all game long. They're still breaking up more passes,
yeah.
Right? They're still getting their hands on the football. I mean, all the dropped interceptions that we've seen, those count as pass defenses. You know, those are if you get your hands on them, you break them up. It'd be nice to hang on to a few of those somewhere along the line, but it would be maybe even nicer just to get your hands on twice as many as you're doing right now, which would only put your, right, like you said, average team in the National Football League in that category.
They've only forced 8 turnovers on the season, 8.
All right, let's get Jerry out at the beaches coming up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jerry.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, bud.
I'll take the answer off the air, but let's say Bradley's gone at end of season. What are the realistic expectations that they could bring in a veteran, a proven track record of Tom Coughlin back to the team to be the head coach? And do you think that's a good idea? I think it would instill some discipline and some intestinal fortitude in these guys. I think it would give them a little bit of put a little fire up under their belly. What do you think?
Sure. You know, Tony and I have tried to follow a policy of let's not get too specific about our own wish list or things like that because the job's not open right now. We're trying to be so, look, we understand where, you know, where Tony said it's not written in stone or whatever words he used. It is close to a certainty as you're going to find right now in sports and something that can't be certain that they're going to have a need for a new head coach. Tom Coughlin is, you know, I think he's interested in a job in the league with a specific team as opposed to working for the league like he did last year. I think had he been able to take his assistants with him to Philadelphia, had they not elevated McAdoo to the head coach in New York, for instance, Tony, and he had a group that he could swing over there.
He'd be coaching now.
He'd be coaching the Eagles right now, right? So I don't put it past him to want to coach. I think Tom Coughlin is as energetic as you'll find, I believe, a 70-year-old man to be. I think he's the most qualified guy you're going to find on the market, no matter what the opening is out there.
Yeah, look, I think when the job opens, for me, what they should be looking for is a guy who's got a previous record of success in this league, which is something they've never hired in Jacksonville. Tom Coughlin was a guy that was successful at Boston College and getting his first NFL job, and that's fine. It worked with Tom, but I don't want to be the guinea pig for the next.
Well, how many of those guys are there that are going to be available?
I know there's not a bunch. I also want the guy to be more of an offensive guy, which I think Coughlin checks that box too. And look, I'm not saying we don't know what Tom's going to do. I think that Tom Coughlin is capable of being a successful head coach or front office guy in this league.
I do too.
I think he can do either one, and I think he's going to have options probably to do both this offseason somewhere.
Probably so, but if I am looking at Tom Coughlin, my first thought is as a head coach because that's what's getting him to the Hall of Fame. His resume as a guy on the sidelines, winning championships, taking this franchise to championship games. So if there's any franchise out there that doesn't consider Tom Coughlin who has an opening, I don't care what the circumstances is, you're crazy for not considering. You're absolutely crazy. He will be the single most qualified person on the market, bar none, and it won't particularly be close, at least among those who have any interest in continuing to coach in the National Football League. You know, so there you have it. All right, we'll come back. This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Take more of your calls a little bit later on at 641-1010. It's Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, This State in Football History.
All right, I'll try to keep this date in football history to this actual date in football history today. Not jump a month ahead.
Yeah.
Had issues yesterday. This date, I believe, December 13th, 1936, was the final game for the Boston Redskins. They lost to the Packers 21-6, and they packed their bags and moved to the nation's capital, where they toil today. In 1936, the Packers won the NFL championship on this date. In 1973, on December 13th, the World Football League granted its first franchise to what city, Tony?
World Football League?
World Football League granted its first franchise to?
Hamburg.
Detroit. All right, there you go. Very close. 1997, the 63rd Heisman Trophy Award was given out. We don't do a lot of these happen during this time period,
sure,
but it was given out to a guy who's one day going to be enshrined in Canton, Ohio, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The first defensive player to win it, Charles Woodson, at least primarily defensive player, to win it. On this date in 1998, Baltimore and Minnesota combined to set an NFL record with three kickoff return touchdowns in the same game. They all came in the first quarter of the Vikings' 38-28 victory. Corey Harris and Patrick Johnson doing it for the Ravens. David Palmer did it for Minnesota. Vikings kicker Gary Anderson set an NFL record when he converted his 34th consecutive field goal on that same date. Didn't hold up that streak once they got to the postseason. Famous birthdays for this date. A couple of Hall of Famers here. Born in 1960. Happy 56 to Richard Dent, the MVP of Super Bowl 21 with the Chicago Bears. Four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 2011. And born 1 year later on this date, Gary Zimmerman, longtime NFL tackle, a member, depending on which publication you look at, a first or second team or all 1990s squad with the Denver Broncos, seven-time Pro Bowler and a Hall of Fame inductee in 2008, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Yeah, Richard Dent, obviously a member of that 1985 Bears team. That's one of those examples of a new coach coming in and keeping one of the coordinators on that team, with Buddy Ryan staying on as the Bears defensive coordinator.
Worked out well.
It worked out well for 1985, but the issues between Ditka and Buddy never really went away.
You would take a Super Bowl championship and then 5 years of turmoil, wouldn't you?
I don't care what happens after that.
Right, I take a lot of turmoil after
that. Oh, who cares? The Honda Drive Around the NFL today, Los Angeles Rams COO Kevin Dimoff announced the firing of head coach Jeff Fisher yesterday in Los Angeles, calling it an organizational decision, and indicated that general manager Les Snead may be on the hot seat as well, despite signing a contract extension before this season, as the team plans to do a complete review of the entire organization. In four-plus season with the Rams, Fisher accumulated a record of 31-45-1. He also notched his 165th loss in 22 seasons as a head coach Sunday in a 42-14 loss against Atlanta, tying him with Dan Reeves for the most losses as a head coach in NFL history. Fox 2 in St. Louis had a little bit of fun when they showed the Dimoff announcement on the local Fox affiliate. The graphic on the screen under the video clip of Dimoff announcing the firing of Jeff Fisher read, "Kevin Dimoff, Rams chief operating officer / professional liar." Adrian Peterson says that he plans to be back at practice for the Vikings this week and hopes he will be able to suit up next week for the Vikings, who are still in the playoff hunt in the NFC after improving to 7-6 with their win in Jacksonville on Sunday. There were reports last week that AP wouldn't push to come back this season if the Vikings were to be eliminated from playoff contention. Melvin Gordon being called week to week with his hip and knee injuries after being carted off the field on Sunday for the Chargers. Kenneth Farrow and Ronnie Hillman expected to be platoons in the San Diego backfield if Gordon is unable to play. The injury to Ryan Tannehill, not as severe as was originally feared. Instead of a torn ACL in his left knee, Tannehill suffered a sprained ACL and MCL in that knee. The Dolphins are still not sure if he will be able to play again this season. Miami, they've won 7 of their last 8. They're 8-5, tied with the Denver Broncos for the 6th seed in the AFC, but now trail the New England Patriots by 3 games with 3 to play after the Pats win on Monday Night Football last night. And finally, the Pro Bowl. Skills competitions are back for this year, with the Pro Bowl going to Orlando.
This will end well.
So they're going to have the accuracy competition. I think I saw a hands competition is coming back to the Pro Bowl as well. As instead of beach flag football, which was a terrible idea, they're adding dodgeball to the Pro Bowl festivities.
Who exactly is playing in this dodgeball game? Right?
I don't know.
I mean, guys are already begging out of playing in the actual game. They're gonna the headliner is gonna be showing up to play dodgeball, or are we gonna go off the Pro Bowl roster to find guys? We'll see. Whatever, man. You know what? Please do not injure any of my long-term commitment fantasy football players.
No, please don't. And by the way, since we didn't get to it on this date, it is officially one calendar year.
That's right. I should have mentioned it.
Since the Jaguars last won a home game. They beat the Colts last year here, 51-16.
1 year ago today.
Yes.
You're reveling in the demolition of the 50-burger.
Yeah.
Made everybody feel good.
It's also 1 year to the day since the Cleveland Browns last won a football game.
Wow.
That game was started by Johnny Manziel. The last time that the Cleveland Browns won a football game.
I remember him.
Yeah. He actually played quarterback for them as recently as last year.
That's right. You know what? I mentioned that yesterday, that we would bring that up today, but I'm glad you did. One calendar year And if they don't beat Tennessee, who knows how long it will stretch.
At least into September.
At least into September. Next year, by the way, as you've heard all morning long, the announcement became official. The Jags will play Baltimore as expected in London next year. It's going to either be week 3 or week 4. No determination yet whether or not the bye week will follow, and it will be up to the Jags whether they want to have their bye immediately following that closely behind it. One of 4 games in London next year. The other home games here in Jacksonville, other than the division games, which you'll get all 3 of them here for the first time in a couple of years, because obviously they played the Colts there this season. You're going to have the Rams coming in. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a thriller right now, right? At least you won't have Jeff Fisher to kick around anymore. What about, I mean, look, I get it. Shai Khan gave Gus Bradley a 1-year extension last offseason. He's going to probably relieve him of his duties a year later. Fisher just got a 2-year extension and didn't make it 2 weeks before they canned him, Tony. And if you are so close to being fired that one blowout loss will push you out the door.
Right.
I mean, look, I know Stan Kroenke's got all the money he needs. This is probably just a pittance to him, right? I think he's the second most wealthy owner in the National Football League, if I'm not mistaken, right? I think Paul Allen tops the list, right? But I think Kroenke has like $8 billion. So he can afford the $8 million or so he's going to owe Jeff Fisher. But, okay, I can afford things too. That doesn't mean I want to do them. I could afford to give the next person I see walks in the door here $20. I'm not going to do that.
No, and nor should you. By the way, I was just...
What if it was because Tyler?
I flipped over watching the LA-Atlanta game this weekend.
God
and,
bless you.
The crowd, my goodness. It didn't take long to kill the Los Angeles momentum as far as who's actually showing up for a football game.
Oh, they'll pack them in, Tony, because it's a great metropolitan area. There's a lot of population there.
But they sold the tickets, so... He doesn't care.
Right,
I mean,
yes.
I think I was looking at attendance because they keep that on Pro Football Reference, and attendance for that game, they listed at 82,495. Ha! Like, there weren't 15,000 people
the old
in there when
tickets distributed
I saw
trick.
It. Yeah. No way. It was nowhere near that.
Looks like with San Diego slated to finish last in the AFC West, they'll be making the trip this way next year. Will we see different results? I don't know. Philip Rivers is like the personal horror show for Jaguar fans.
Again.
The Bengals coming to town.
We finally get out of third place in this division. We get to fourth, and those darn Chargers
they follow
can't
us.
Just finish
they
third
just follow
again.
Us. They follow us down the standings. The Bengals coming in, they had a very mediocre year, but they've been, you know, a perennial, at least playoff contender in the last half dozen years or so. The Ravens, as we said in London, and then the Seahawks game, which I think, you know, just in terms of appeal, as a marquee team, they didn't look like it this past week, right? But in general, over, say, the last 5-year period, would have been one of the more premier franchises in the National Football League.
And it's kind of cool to get them while they're in this kind of run. I mean, you only
get
them
at home. Yeah, the Gus Bradley reunion.
Yeah,
oh.
No, not really. Oh. You only get to see them once every 8 years.
Right.
So you're getting to see them while they're pretty darn good.
You're excited because your boy Russ is coming. Huh?
I do love watching Russ.
I know you love watching Russ. You didn't love watching him this past week
all
that much. So there you have it. On the road. Well, they play the entire AFC North, so they're on the road with Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Can't lose to Cleveland, can you? Please don't have it be a year from today, right? And Cleveland's still seeking their first victory since December 13, 2014.
2 years
2015,
to the day.
Right?
Be something.
Oh, my gosh.
That would be
at least it's a road game. The Jags have a chance. The Steelers on the road, the Cardinals and 49ers on the road as well. And the last place finisher in the AFC, which is the New York Jets on the road, is where they're trending towards finishing in addition to your divisional games. That's what you got next year.
It's not bad. You know, we were talking earlier about...
Not bad in what, from what regard, what standpoint?
I mean, Seattle's coming here. That's
I mean,
nice.
In terms of, like, teams you'd like to see, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. It's not this year. This year was better.
Yeah.
And
the year after, look at this. This seriously, the year after, to interrupt you really quickly.
Fine.
The Patriots, right? Maybe, who knows when Brady's going to be done, right?
Please don't take that to London.
Right? Oh, gosh. You got the Patriots, you got the Jets. Now I'm bummed out, right? Because then they're going to not get that game in Jacksonville. You got the Jets, you got the Eagles, you got the Redskins, and the team in the AFC North that finishes in the same place in the standings. But those are some, you know,
after they win the division next year,
things like
Pittsburgh will be coming here.
Pittsburgh or Baltimore could be one of those, or
one of
Cincinnati.
Those. Yeah.
Don't think it'll be Cleveland.
Could be one of those. You know, we were talking earlier about the, you know, the Allen Hurns comment about playing spoiler.
Yes.
And how it's not really about that for him. And I think for fans, they get a lot more up for that than usually teams do. It's just the NFL doesn't inspire the kind of rivalry between players that it does between fans.
They don't stay as long as the fans do.
No. But I was looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers schedule, and week 17, they play the Cleveland Browns. And I do think there is some legitimate rivalry between those two franchises because they've been going back and forth for so long
sure.
in the history of this league. I don't think there's anything at this point in the Cleveland season that they would like more than to be the team that stands between Pittsburgh and getting in.
Well, and for them, it probably won't impact their ability to have the number one overall pick in the draft either. So
it'll just be win, spoil it for Pittsburgh.
Win, spoil it for Pittsburgh, and get off the schneid of being the second team to go 0-16 potentially if they don't win in the next couple weeks.
That could be a fun little week 17.
That could, although I'm sitting here thinking, why can't I have a week 17 championship game? The fact that I own Le'Veon Bell in 6 of the 10 leagues I'm still alive in. Are you kidding me?
Because you only need them for 2 more weeks.
I only need them for 2. I know, but that's what I'm saying. I want the Cleveland matchup maybe a week earlier if I could get that. thank you very much. Thank you, Le'Veon, if I haven't mentioned it to you in the last hour for all you did for me this past weekend. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back if you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 on the phone lines and the text line driven by Duval Ford. A little bit more from Gus Bradley as well as he met with the media yesterday. Phone lines jammed up right now. So if you're on the line, I promise you we'll take your calls right out of the break. That's straight ahead on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, for once, Tony, I will do what I said I will do.
Holy cow.
And we will actually go right to the phone calls coming out of the break. I was already mentally on another direction, and Tyler goes, all three callers still holding. Aha! Yes, there was something I planned on doing, so let's get out there at 641-1010 and welcome Ian on the north side. Ian, thanks for hanging on. What can we do for you today?
Hey, guys. As far as the poll question, I definitely don't want any coaches to return.
Clean sweep.
I'm even so, we've been so devoid of talent for so long, I'm even willing to strip it to the scouting department, which sounds kind of extreme, but it got me thinking, how much does the scouting department play in our lack of success? Like, who in the organization hires and fires them? Is there any way to rank the scouts throughout the league? Do we have one of the worst groups of scouts? And, you know, how does that part of the organization work? I've never heard any type of commentary on the scout.
Sure. All right. A couple of things here. I think it's fair to judge them by the results. Depends on how you feel about the overall talent on the team. If you think the talent is better than the record indicates, maybe you're not as hard on the scouting department as you would be on the coaching staff, for instance. Typically, what happens, Tony, when you have a coaching change, the current scouting department will stay in through the NFL draft because they've done all the film work. They've put in all the time. They're trying, and they may want to, you know, try to latch on as part of your next group of scouts coming in. So they have an incentive to do as good a job as possible because their name is on that work, right? Same as, hey, what are you playing for in these last 3 weeks? Well, the eye in the sky never lies. So the play of the players on the field goes on film, and that's going to be evaluated. So will the talent of the scouts be evaluated. But typically that's what you see. Let's say there's a new coach hired 10 days after the season. Well, they'll stick with the scouting staff. They'll go all the way through the draft, and then you'll see – maybe one or two retained, but for the most part, you'll see new scouts come in, new director of scouting name. It's a good question. Is it a Caldwell decision on that? I would suspect.
I would assume.
Because he has final say on personnel, so he is the one that is taking in the advice from the scouts and saying, here's the guy we're pushing. We're pushing Dante Fowler. We're pushing Leonard Williams in conjunction with what you think. That sets the basis of what direction they're going to go. So I think that is a GM level decision, but I'm just making that assumption. I could be
I would assume. Could there be a guy where the GM kind of trusts the guy to kind of manage that kind of thing?
Right.
I could see that being the case too, but I'm not 100% sure.
You know what? We'll try to dig into that one. Ian, it's a very good question, but that's how it'll be handled if there is a coaching change, you know, in terms of retaining guys. Most likely the guys who are currently here will work through the draft because otherwise, let's say you brought in a bunch of new scouts. Where are you getting them from? If they haven't been working, have they been evaluating players to the degree that scouts embedded with an NFL team will be doing? So it's difficult to fill that role and start from scratch in January when you've got, you know, all these guys have been out on the road watching college football all season. Good question. Thank you. And we'll try to get a little clarity on the exact chain of command with that. Let's get CJ on the south side next up. Good morning, CJ.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
All right. Hey, yeah, I got a question. Now, as far as, like, the coaching changes and the position changes that's going to come after that, I'm kind of looking at the team as a whole and off base, all offense, defense, special teams. I see it being more of a change in the offense more than so the defense. Because I'm looking at some of these players about who I know ain't going to be here next year. I know Mercedes Lewis is not going to be here. Julius Thomas is not going to be here.
I don't know about Mercedes. But go ahead.
Denard Robinson, I don't think, is going to be here. I don't think Brian Walters is going to be here. And between Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon, one of them is not going to be here.
I don't think those are all locks or givens. But your point being what? Just that there's going to be turnover and what
is going to be more turnover on the offense, because I feel like why change something that's improving in the way the defense is playing? Like, let's say we keep it this pace, and let's say we overall fourth in total defense by the end of the year. A new coach is not going to look at that. Well, I believe he's not going to look at that and say, this needs to be changed because of the results and what is shown based on what's compared to what's going to be shown on the offense. Then he's going to look like, well, the quarterback is regressing and receivers getting drops and the running game is struggling. And he's going to look more at that and look at, okay, these are the results that came more off the offense struggling, which the losses, you know.
Right, yeah, I think we all agree there's going to be more turnover on the offense. I just think we could argue about some of the specific players you mentioned being locks to not be on this roster, but neither here nor there. I think you're right. I mean, it appears you've got a good, mostly young nucleus on the defensive side of the football. That why wouldn't you want to keep most of that intact? I think that will be the goal.
Look, it's the NFL, and the NFL good teams turn over the bottom 12 to 15 positions of their roster every year. And this is a bad team, so that number may be north of that this year. I don't know what it's going to be, and I'm not even sure, you know, I haven't thought a whole bunch about free agency to this point this year. The draft, we're basically just starting to talk about, but the Jags look like they're going to have a top three pick in all likelihood in the NFL draft. So look, I think there are a lot of questions about what this offseason is going to look like that we have a lot of time to discuss and try to figure out. I think Mercedes Lewis is probably going to be back.
$4 million is what he's on. Same as he's making this year. It's not a big balloon payment.
I don't think Julius is going to be.
I don't either. I don't know why. I don't think it's a lock. Brian Walters doesn't have a roster spot locked up, but I don't think it's an automatic that he's not here either, because, look, he the biggest knock on him to me this year is you count on him when called upon to be the reliable hands guy on the punt return team, and he hadn't been that. And, you know, he is a capable, solid, mostly catch anything in his area receiver without top end physical skills. He's a good player, not a great player. So he's certainly, guys like that are under consideration to not make the team. They're competing hard for the roster spot every year, but I don't think it's a lock that he's not here. And they're not getting rid of T.J. Yeldon. T.J. Yeldon's on a rookie deal. He's cheap as can be. So the question is Chris Ivory back? Well, if he's healthy in the offseason, he may, in fact, be back. Now, could they go in that direction in the draft and spend a high draft pick on a Leonard Fournette or a Dalvin Cook? It's possible, and one of those guys might be gone. But I don't think just the list he gave us, Tony, they're all locks to be gone. But no question, it seems like there'll be more turnover. We discussed this yesterday. Offensive line, there's going to be some new starters in that group. You know, there's a lot of questions. Could have a new starter at quarterback. You never know.
Don't know
how it all goes. I will say again, and I'm not the only one who's pointed this out, we all thought the offense was trending in the right direction. Let's keep that group intact coming into 2016, and it turned out to be a disaster, whereas the defense has easily outshone them this year. You hope that the defense is just going to continue to take a step forward. But, you know, like we were saying with Blake, well, just let's cut down that 18 turnovers. Well, how about let's produce some actual turnovers on defense, you know, so that they, whereas they're good statistically, there are reasons why that number is probably not as strong as it indicates, because as we talked about, teams go conservative against the Jags because they know they don't have to do anything special to beat them.
No, they don't.
And why risk turning it over to a team that doesn't force many?
And if you look at yards per game, all right, just real quick, and we'll get back to the next caller here, but if you look at yards per game, it's a bad measuring stick of NFL defense. It's just not the measuring stick. Points is one thing. Yards in the end are kind of inconsequential because there's just different things that determine this. Arizona's number one in the league in yards per game allowed, and they're not going to the playoffs this year. Minnesota is fighting for a playoff spot this year. Denver is fighting for a playoff spot this year. Baltimore in pretty good shape, and Jacksonville is fifth, followed by Houston and Chicago.
And by the way, Baltimore was number one going into this week. How'd that work out for
So that could be – I mean, there's a potential that all seven of the top-ranked defenses there in yards right now don't make the playoffs.
Right.
There's a chance for three of them. It's
not a good measuring stick in terms of who is actually winning football games necessarily.
No. And if you look at points, Minnesota, New England, Seattle, Baltimore, Dallas, Denver, and the Giants are the top seven.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
Playoff bound. All right, let's get Desmond up next on the west side. Good morning, Desmond.
Hey, how are y'all doing? How y'all doing today?
We're fine. What's up?
Of course, man. I got one quick question. I'm going to take the comment off the air. Okay. Shad Khan, as a fan base, do you think that we're going to start looking at Shad Khan? Like, because you seen what Seattle did. Not Seattle, but St. Louis did with Jeff Fisk. They let Jeff Fisk go after 4 years. Like, I think the same time fan as Gus Bradley. They let him go after. Five. And you see, they had gave him a 2 year extension, and they had decided to let him go. Now with Shad Khan, as you see, we've been in the slump for like God knows how long. I think we ain't been in the playoffs for like 9 years, and we let Gus Bradley stay here for 4 years and just not do anything. And Shad Khan just letting everything ride out like for the end.
We understand what's happened over the last 4 years. What's the question though? What's the point?
Is that. As a fan base, do you think Shad Khan is the right owner for even though it's his first time like being an owner as a football like a football owner? Do you think he's the right owner because any other owner would being let go, Gus Bradley, like after the second year? And I just wanted to know, you think we have the right owner? That's it. That's all.
Difference would it make if let's say we said no? So. Unless he wants to sell it, he's the owner of the team. You don't get to pick your owner. You can't fire the owner. This is not Green Bay where the people own the franchise. Do I think it's fair to question his decisions? Certainly. It's all fair game. But when you phrase it the way, you think we have the right owner? Well, look, there are plenty of...
You get to choose a coach and a GM. You don't choose the owner.
And there are plenty of owners that never won anything until they won something.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, so Jerry Jones looked like the right owner when he had Jimmy Johnson, and then Jimmy Johnson drafted a bunch of great players and traded for a bunch of great players. Jerry Jones didn't look like so much the right owner once that era ended and he started meddling in the football decision. Now he looks like, oh, you know what? Oh, Jerry Jones, things are going great in Dallas. So I don't know. Is Dan Snyder the right owner? Well, they're in playoff contention this year. He's a meddlesome guy. You know, is Stan Kroenke the right owner?
Whatever that means. Look, I can tell you it's Stan Kroenke. If he was the owner of this team, they'd probably be in Los Angeles. So from that perspective, Khan is a much better owner than
Stan
Kroenke. Good
call on that, right?
So from just a Jacksonville perspective, he's better than that. I think, look, Khan has some very, very important decisions to make in this offseason about the next two or three years and the direction of this franchise because it has been a decade since they've been good.
I don't think it's the coaching decision. I think it's the general manager decision.
I think it's huge. And because whatever general manager he has is going to choose the coach,
right?
Essentially. He's going to trust his football guys to make the right football decisions. And for everyone out there who is, if it's Caldwell, and we're going to take a million calls that are, why are they keeping Caldwell? This is the guy who chose Gus and the guy who chose Blake.
Sure.
And that's all fair. And that has to be part of the decision process for Shad Khan as well.
And on the other side, you'd also say it's also the guy who chose Telvin and Ramsey and Simon Malik. And right. So he's had, you're not going to bat 1,000 when you're the GM. Obviously, the quarterback decision. I think the quarterback may be more important than the coach in today's NFL, but they're both very, very important decisions, and right now those have not gone down well for you know the results that we've seen here. So, look, bottom line, you can question anything you like. You're a fan. Whether I think I don't sit here and say fans should do anything. Fans can feel how they want to feel about these circumstances, but if you're disgruntled with Shad as the owner, you're going to be disgruntled because he's the owner, and he's going to be the owner. And I'm glad they have him, quite frankly, for the reason you pointed out. The commitment that he's shown to the city of Jacksonville to make it work here is paramount above anything else, because if that doesn't work, then who really cares who the head coach of this franchise is? You know, not a lot of people would if they had followed a different path and decided to look for greener pastures, which they didn't. So thanks to Shad for that, at the very least, and hopefully he makes the right decisions this offseason for the franchise. All right, we got to take a timeout here. We'll come back, see if we got anybody else on the line. Get the fan feedback spotlight asking you which, if any, assistant coaches you'd like to see retained for 2017 for the Jacksonville Jaguars. With that, Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Live at Everbank, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars wide receiver Allen Hurns joined the drill this morning to talk about the disappointing season, but he did say there was one bright spot for the team and for the fans, and that guy is wide receiver Marquise Lee.
Man, me and A-Rod were just talking about it the other day. You know, yeah, the season hasn't been going good for us, you know, but we're proud that Marquise Lee got a good year under his belt. You know, he really needed that. How his first 2 years went, you know, we just proud of him, man.
Now be listening to 1010XL and 92.5 FM throughout the day. Malik Jackson will join the guys at Midday Chalk, and Telvin Smith will join the Frangie Show. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. From fantasy football to the final score, injuries impact the game. Listen for the personal injury attorneys Farrah and Farrah Injury Update on 1010XL. Farrah and Farrah, protecting you and your family since 1979. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Final few minutes of Jaguars Today coming up. Malik Jackson joins the Midday Chalk at the top of the hour, so stick around for that here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Let's get one, got one on the line, so let's get that in. Take a look at the fan feedback spotlight and tie up a few loose ends here. Tony, Donald on the north side. Thanks for the call, Donald. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
What's up?
Well, my question for you guys is that, first of all, I'm not willing to give up on Blake just yet. Last year, he was one of the top rated. My question to you is, what do you think he can do this offseason compared to what he did last offseason compared to the season prior? You know, that would help him be more proficient as well as getting his throwing skills and everything else back down.
All right. Thank you for that. And I'll say we were in here this morning. They're filling a feature for Jaguars.com. Tony, before we go, they do it every week. All right. A last look at last week's game and a look ahead. And this question came up. So I'll give credit to Brian Sexton, who voiced his opinion, which I agree with. But, you know, having just heard it this morning, I didn't want to feel like I was stealing it from him, that, you know what Blake needs to do? Focus on whatever he did to work on those mechanics and tightening up his throwing delivery and building consistency into his game, work on that every available day you have in the offseason. I'm not saying never take a day off, but like Brian said, don't take any European trip. Don't take a vacation to Australia. You go out to Southern California or you stay here in Jacksonville or wherever it is you work with your quarterback's coach. If you want to, as Brian put it, if you got a $100 million contract, which is kind of like when you're looking for that big contract for a quarterback. You know, $20 million a year is Kirk Cousins making about $20 million a year under the franchise tag this year.
5 years, 20 is about the expectation now.
Right. So if that carrot is out there for you, if I told you, Tony, if you really put in the hard work for 365 days, here's what you need to do to give yourself the best chance to have a $100 million contract.
I don't need a day off.
Coming your way. You wouldn't take a single day off, would you? That's what he needs to show. Insane dedication to realizing that this is maybe the last opportunity he's going to get to walk in as an incumbent starter anywhere in the NFL for a long time if he doesn't get it done next year. Is he salvageable? I hope so. That's part of the big question with this franchise. Who is making those decisions? If it's Dave Caldwell, I think he gets the foot in the door first. Blake does. In turn, you know, there may be competition brought in, but I think the idea in Dave Caldwell's mind is that this is his guy. Going forward, we'll see. We don't know if it'll be Dave Caldwell making that decision. We don't know what the coaching staff's going to look like, but that's what Blake can do, is have crazy nonstop dedication to being the most professional this side of Peyton Manning that ever came down the line. Watching film, doing drills, doing all those things, getting his receivers together to work out.
Yeah, look, and I said it a month and a half ago when Blake kind of indicated that he didn't put the same kind of work in this offseason that he had the previous one, and I was stunned. Honestly, because it was a guy that, since the first time I met him when we were at the Super Bowl, through when they drafted him and he came in here and did the rounds and his 3 years here in Jacksonville, I've always had the thought in my head of that guy being one that, one, loves football. I mean, just absolutely loves playing football. And two, the questions with Blake were always going to be whether or not he could physically do it, not whether or not he'd put in the work to be able to do it. And to have him questioning the effort he put in this past offseason was stunning to me. Because I had that idea of him in my head. And if he really made that kind of mistake last offseason, I don't think he's making it this year.
I hope not. Can't afford to.
He's called it a nightmare over and over. And I think he needs a reset button, if that means taking a week off, 2 weeks once the season ends, to kind of just get over whatever happened in 2016. I'm okay with that. But from that moment forward, it needs to be work every day. If that's what it's going to take for him to be successful in this league, then that's what you do. I mean, there's no other job you're going to find that they're going to hand you a check where, even if it's not $100 million, even if it's just backup money in this league, you're not going to make that doing anything else.
No.
You want to earn that as long as you possibly can. And this, the kind of season he's having right now, is putting all of that in jeopardy for him going forward.
Especially when he admits he's not a natural thrower
of
the football. Well, if you know that, then become a proficient
work, man.
Guy who got there right through drilling over and over and over again, honing that skill. All right, fan feedback question today. Would you like to retain any of the coaches from this coaching staff for the Jags going into 2017? On Facebook, Steven said, yes, Jerry Sullivan, one of the best coaches we have, done a great job with our young wideout group. Ronald said Todd Wash and the rest of the defensive staff, if we can somehow hold on to Jerry Sullivan and Nathaniel Hackett, that would be great. No way they're keeping that many guys from a franchise that just went 2-11 at least to start this year. Alan said, nobody. We need coaches who have the culture of winning about them. Josh said, nope, we need a completely new coaching staff as well. While I like Jerry Sullivan, I believe it's time to bring Keenan McCardo home as receivers coach. Chad Lewis said, Todd Wash, Jerry Sullivan, and Nathaniel Hackett. There's no, with the offense playing the way it is, don't compare Nathaniel Hackett just to Greg Olsen. You got to be shooting higher for this offense, you know, because, and now maybe he's hamstrung by what Blake is capable of doing in the current set of circumstances, because he can't have that 6 months of offseason work done miraculously in the middle of the season. But regardless, I can't see that happening. Andrej went with Jerry Sullivan, no one else. Catherine said, Gus Bradley sticks around. That's what she threw in there.
Getting a bunch of that
at the end. There's some who are still out there. Not everybody feels the same way about it. I think that is exceedingly unlikely. Let's just put it that way, to put it nicely. What'd you get on Twitter today?
Just a couple here from D33. We got Coach Sully. He actually knows what he's doing compared to the other losers you call coaches.
Oh my.
From Jarrell, Nate Hackett, offense has been more balanced, better quarterback play could have led to more points. I mean, that technically it's true, but that doesn't mean Hackett's doing a great job. And from, again, a name that I'm not allowed to read, wide receivers love Jerry Sullivan and linebackers coach Hazleton. So
you have to show me who wrote that in a minute, and so I can figure out why. No check to tape Tuesday today because Jeff Logman didn't join us today because he had daddy duty, but he will be in tomorrow checking the tape. Check the tape Wednesday. Watch the tape Wednesday.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a clever, catchy way to do it, but Logs will be in tomorrow. David Garrard, get better, feel better. He was going to make it in today, but he came down under the weather as well. Tyler Devitt, MVP of the season so far, a fantastic opening tribute to Jimmy Smith and his induction into the Pride this weekend. So that'll about do it for us. Thanks for playing along on this Tuesday. Back with Logs tomorrow, live at Everbank. For Tyler, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I am Mike Dempsey, inviting you to stick around for Malik Jackson coming up in about 10 minutes with the Midday Chalk, straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.